I'm just going to go right down the line now.
That's fine.
Open a work session on House Bill 2795.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2795 requires BOLI to audit prevailing wage rate information and increases the maximum fee limits paid by contractors on public works contracts. This is a follow-up to our work session on Wednesday, and you have in front of you a -1 amendment which establishes the sunset for the audits and the fee limits for on January 1st, 2011. It also clarifies that a public agency shall pay the fee at the time the agency enters into the public works contract.
Good. Would the commissioner and or staff want to come up and tell us what we're doing here, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Dan Gardner, Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. And the -1 amendments, I believe, are what you have before you. What they do is sunset after a three-year period back the fee back to its original basis of 100 minimum, 5,000 maximum. It also sunsets the audit as well. As you can see, the sunsets are set forth, I believe it's in Section 7 on page 4.
The amendment, page 4 is the amendment.
Does anyone have any, once we get a chance, any questions?
Mr. Chair, I haven't really had time to review these, unfortunately. I do have a question on page 2, line 28 through 30, which is the line that directed the commissioner to periodically audit the wage data. And has that been removed out in this amendment?
Jessica Adamson is going to come up and help us, too, from as soon as she gets on up here.
And so I knew we were going to sunset the bill, Mr. Chair, but I wasn't sure we were changing substantially the rest of it.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jessica Adamson with Associated General Contractors. Mr. Chair, Harrison Polvey, the amendments on page 2, line 28, what you're seeing on page 1, starting on line 2, and it continues through page 3, line 2, is really the portion it gets inserted and essentially into the statute to say this is the section that will be sunsetted. So that when the statute is written, you'll see the portion that becomes effective January 1, and then there'll be a second portion that shows the same language, only footnoted, saying after this date it will be sunset and will no longer be operative. So we're not taking out the audit portion, but the section of the bill in its entirety has to be rewritten and shown with the portion that is deleted in order to after the sunset, in order to make the sunset work from a technical basis. So that's why you see in section 3 of the amendment, or excuse me, rather on page 1, line 2, you see the full of the text that deals with the audit rewritten. And on section 5 of the amendment, page 3, starting on line 12, you see the entirety of the section dealing with the fee increase and also another reference to the audit rewritten, with the fee going from $7,500 to $5,000 and from $250 to $1,000. So, again, those are being inserted. It's an addition, not a deletion, to the current bill. So, indeed, the bill does accomplish, as we had discussed, or the amendment, rather, accomplishes, as we discussed, the audit for a three-year portion of time, the fee increase for a three-year portion of time, and a change from the contractor paying the fee to the contracting agency paying the fee.
follow up, Mr. Jerk? Well, can you just point out to me where in the Dash 1 amendment, I guess, or in the original bill that's left intact, I don't see it left intact, where the commissioner is directed to periodically audit the wage survey data.
Actually, I can answer that question. Actually, Section 2 stays the same, but Section 3 and Section 5 are the things that are the sections that deal with the sunset implementation. So the original bill with the audit information is still there in text. But that additional section needs to be included to outline the sunset. Yes.
Well, that's showing me that it's being deleted.
No, Section 3 is different from Section 2. Section 2 implements the audit. Section 3 has to be written to delete that language if the sunset is not repealed by January 1st, 2011. That's why it has to be written in that fashion.
Oh, I'm with you now. Thanks.
Representative Berger.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if my reading... The bill made the top level fee $7,500, and the amendment repeals that.
Mr. Chair, Representative
reverses
Berger,
that.
Basically, the fee right now is $100 minimum, $5,000 maximum. What the amendment does is takes it to that for a three-year period, and then reverts. It takes it to $250 minimum, $7,500 maximum for a three-year period, and then reverts it back to the $100 minimum, $5,000 maximum at that point in time.
After 3 years.
After 3 years.
And, Mr. Chair, if I could follow up. So that is the fee change.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, that is a fee change. It is a temporary three-year fee increase to get the fund back to a sustainable level.
Okay. I guess. Because it's very confusing between the amendments, you guys.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
It's very confusing.
So it's really not a sunset of the bill. What you're doing is automatically reverting the fee back to its original structure.
Correct.
Mr. Chair, absolutely. That's exactly what we're doing. And it sets a three-year sunset to the audit portion as well.
Mm. Wasn't really my what I had heard was going to happen, you know, when we were talking about sunsetting the audit and sunsetting the fee. You know, I guess I envisioned that it would sunset, and then it would be up to us to come back and revisit that to see if we wanted to change it again. But if you're comfortable with it, Commissioner, I guess...
And we always, the legislature can always return to anything at any time.
And change it.
Mr. Chair, you're absolutely right. Next session, if different circumstances face us, there are, you know, the legislature can change something at that point in time, or any session thereafter to re-implement in a different fashion.
But it's exceedingly difficult to return to issues once it goes to the ballot and the people have spoken.
Mr. Chair, when there's statutory changes to the ballot, the legislature still has the opportunity to do that.
That's true.
Mr. Chair, I would point out, not that you're sensitive about that today or anything. Mr. Chair, I would point out that Mr. O'Brien's here with us today, who wanted to make a bit of a comment about the change of the collection of the fee.
Great. Sir, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have proposed that we change the collection method of the fee. Currently, the fee is collected through the general contractor. The general contractor has to calculate the fee, include that fee in his bid, and then in turn, when he's invoiced by Boley, send a check to Boley. And what we're asking is that this is somewhat of a pass-through payment, so why not just have the agency, once they award the contract, just send a check directly to Boley and take the general contractor out of that loop?
Well, I know if I had to send a fee in, I would tack a administration charge onto that fee.
Absolutely, and it's done.
Right,
and,
of course. Is there anything else?
Well, yes, we've calculated that based on the collections this last year of about $900,000, that amount of savings to the county on that added administrative fee would be somewhere in the $60,000 range.
So we're saving government money then, right?
Yes.
Good.
Right.
Representative Berger.
Never mind, Mr. Chair. I'll stay out of this discussion.
And, Mr. Chair, one other thing I might be able to point out is that local governments, cities and counties are already required to send BOLI when they are doing a prevailing wage project a notice that they're doing the project and the value of the project. And it would be very easy, you know, for them at that point in time to go ahead and send a check along with it as well.
So I have one more just to help me through this because I haven't had time today to read this. So when exactly does this sunset? I'm looking January, is it January 1st?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hulvey, January 1st, 2011. That's in section
7,
okay. Page 4 of your bill on lines, was it 5 through 5 and 6?
Any further questions?
Thank you.
Of these nice people, does the committee feel comfortable moving this today? If so, I will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I must clarify too. There's currently a subsequent referral to Ways and Means on the measure.
And
the motion's made.
Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2795.
Representative Hulvey moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2795. Is there discussion or objection? So moved. Representative.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2795 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Representative Hulvey moves House Bill 2795 as amended to the committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm appreciative that they're trying to save money for local government. I'm not persuaded that this fee is necessary, and I will be voting no.
Very good, Representative. Thank you. Any further? Representative Holby.
I would hope that the commissioner would come back to us and keep us posted on the viability and the financial status of the prevailing wage fund so we can have a little heads up as to whether we need to keep the bill intact or adjust that fee yet again. So thank you.
All right.
Chair, I'd be happy to do that.
Very good. Thank you. Any further comments, discussion? Clerk Kristen, please.
Representative Edwards.
Aye.
Representative Berger.
No.
Vice Chair
Excuse.
Vice Chair
Aye.
Excuse.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you very much. Representative Holby, would you like
Actually,
to carry?
Mr. Chair, we don't need
we
to
don't
carry.
We don't need to carry.
We'd love to carry it. Ways and Means.
Thank you very much. Work session, House Bill 2795. I'm going to jump ahead to some things that we can do today because I know at least Representative Berger is really under the time. So I'm going to jump ahead. Unless Representative Witt, are you here on a bill?
You're on 2673 and 2674.
All right. Then I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2674 first. Teresa?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2474 requires an employer to pay amounts deducted from employees' wages in accordance with law or an agreement requiring or authorizing wage deductions, and it also allows a civil penalty to be assessed for up to $1,000 for violating the measure's provisions. You have in your packet a Dash 1 amendment which establishes that the employer has to pay the wage deductions within 7 days of the date the wages from the deductions are made or paid.
Thank you. Representative Witt, would you please come on up here, help us out? And we're on 74, not 73. Here's 73 right after this.
Please. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
74.
Brad Witt, State Representative, House District 31. And essentially a very straightforward bill that in essence says that if an employer makes deductions from the payroll for various purposes, it could be for charities, child support, court order payments, insurance payments, as a matter of fact the state does that, loan repayments, professional fees or dues, savings and retirement accounts, those sorts of things, whatever the issue might be, that if the deduction is made, then the transfer of the payment needs to be made. And the amendment says within 7 days, I believe, yes. With that, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any questions of Representative Witt?
No, Mr. Chair, we have further testimony.
Yeah, yes, we are going to hear everybody.
Okay.
I'm going to, while Representative Witt's sitting there, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2673 so you can testify to that, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
House Bill 2673, overtime after 8 hours, with some exceptions, is an attempt to restore the 8-hour workday, principally in Oregon's non-agricultural private sector. It represents a return to the protections that were enjoyed by Oregon's workers prior to 1995, and is in keeping with two centuries of social and economic progress. This effort was first begun by a gentleman by the name of Robert Owen in England in 1817, and that was the same year that he coined the 8-hour movement phrase, 8 hours labor, 8 hours recreation, and 8 hours rest. Subsequent to that, the movement spread to New Zealand, Australia, and the United States. Roughly in the mid-19th century, whereupon just shortly after the Civil War, Congress passed 8-hour protection law for all federal employees. Similar legislation was passed for federal public works in 1912. Railroad workers gained the same protections in 1916. And then work that was conducted for wartime wartime production during the First World War also gained the same kinds of protections. And then the national recovery projects of the 1930s, beginning in 1933, also gained the same protections. Interestingly, Ford Motor Company voluntarily implemented an 8-hour working day in 1914. It increased production so precipitously that Ford Motor Company's competition also adopted voluntarily the 8-hour working day. It became the norm in the auto industry because of that. Long and short of it is, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this is not a new concept. It's been around for a couple hundred years and recognizes the fact that most of us have three different interests in our lives, a work interest, a recreation interest, and a need for some rest. And this bill tries to make sure that workers are able to fit all of those into a work day. With that, thank you very much.
Any questions of Representative Witt on House Bill 2673? Representative, I'm on this bill. I do think people do have to get rest. I have some reservations as the session goes on of us getting involved in these relationships. Now, I don't want people working to death, you know that. But I just think, you know, for example, my wife has a good relationship with her workers, and sometimes they do work over 8, and I don't even know what her policy is, to be quite frank with you. But I think she's at times too generous with some of her employers and employees in the past. I wouldn't have been quite so generous, but that's for different reasons than this. But I do appreciate your efforts here and everything you do for working people in Oregon. Representative Rosenbaum, did you want to speak to this bill, too, 2673? Okay, please come. Well, we're just going to do 2673. We're going to open it back up. I opened it just for Representative Witt, and then we're going to go back and work 2674. Then I'm going to jump down to Senate Bill 204. Then we're going to finish out the calendar because we're not working those bills today. So I'm just going to, do you want to testify now to 2673 or when I open it back up?
Whatever you wish.
All right, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2673. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And we're still in House Bill 2674. Representative Rosenbaum, you want to speak to that bill? And Dan, Commissioner Gardner, come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Representative, just so I can explain, I want to work the bills we're going to work today first, because some people may have to go, and then we'll go to the rest after that. That's the logic behind
that. Thank you. I appreciate that. Mr. Chair, my testimony will be very brief. I am Diane Rosenbaum, State Representative for House District 42, Southeast and Northeast Portland, appearing in support of House Bill 2674, as well as the amendment that was mentioned earlier. House Bill 2674 simply says that if money is deducted from your paycheck by an employer, that money needs to go to the purpose for which it was intended, and to do so in a timely manner. This is particularly important in the event of things like child support payments, where money can be withheld and sometimes doesn't end up getting to the intended recipient. So obviously that's extremely important when we're talking about our kids being taken care of. There are many other reasons for which money can be withheld, whether it's charitable deductions, union dues, child support that I mentioned already. So we're just saying that that money within 7 days, I believe, is the time period we're talking about needs to go where it should be going. And I think that's simple, and I support it.
Thank you. Mr. Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dan Gardner, Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries, and I'm happy to be here today testifying in favor of House Bill 2674. The bill just really requires employers to properly dispense payroll deductions in a timely manner per their agreement with their employees authorizing such deductions. The failure of an employee to do so would be considered an unlawful payroll deduction. This bill really just sets forth civil penalties that could be assessed against an employer by the Bureau of Labor and Industries should an employer fail to do so in a timely manner. As was mentioned with the Dash 1 amendments, that would be 7 days. And the key word is could. We don't, we're not in the practice of fining on the wage and hour side of the Bureau for first-time violations, or are we really interested in doing so? We're interested in seeing that the money properly get where it's intended to. We get calls on this quite frequently. Oftentimes it can be, as Representative Rosenbaum mentioned, child support. If you are having deducted from your paycheck child support and it doesn't get to the child support division, the child support division does not come against the employer. They come back to the employee and make them pay it basically a second time. And we get complaints on this on a regular basis. The only thing available to an employee is to take your employer to court. And in the meantime, pay your child support basically twice. Or sometimes it's a charitable deduction that's deducted and doesn't end up where it's intended. We actually send out routinely roughly about 100 letters a year. All we can do for someone who files a complaint with us is to send that letter to the employer stating what the law is, and from there we have no legal responsibility. What this would do is give us the availability to tell the employer that it needs to go there within 7 days, or we can fine you up to $1,000. We have absolutely no intent of doing so unless an employer falls into a situation where perhaps they've done it three consecutive times in a one-year period or something of that nature. It just gets their attention to make sure the money gets where it's intended to go. This bill actually was drafted. It was Senate Bill 145, considered by the 2005 legislature. And I think with the Dash 1 amendments, gives a proper time frame, and I'd urge your support.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Berger.
Yeah. Commissioner Gardner, thank you, Mr. Chair. Section 2 in the back page, it says all sums collected as penalties under section will first be applied towards reimbursement of cost incurred. Do you have any idea what kind of reimbursement you're going to be expecting? I mean, on a $1,000 violation, how much you think it's going to cost you to...
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, that's a standard phrasing with all of our penalties.
If I understand.
If we do actually assess a penalty, which we rarely do on the wage and hour side, what we're allowed to do is collect the time that was spent by employees on the investigation of the fine, of the penalty, of the violation, and assessing the penalty.
So, Mr. Chair, follow up. Mm-hmm. So you have this authority with other fees, with other penalties now. So on these kinds of things, how much time does it take? How much of the penalty it goes to the general fund, and how much do you keep?
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, we very rarely ever do assess a fine. It depends on the type and nature of the violation. If, for instance, in this particular case, say it was a child support payment, and all we did was took in the complaint from the from the employee, sent a letter, a demand letter to the employer, and got confirmation back from them that they in fact had sent the payment on to the child support division, you wouldn't have more than a couple of hours involved. And you know, we wouldn't assess a fine, but if we had, what would we deduct from that? About $50.
Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you very much. I'm going to call Brett Arvidson, Matt Mingalan, I hope I got that right, and Elizabeth Kushwa. And then right after that, Omar Avina Trejo. There isn't enough room up here, but just, it's, you can pull another chair up if you like. Fine with me. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, Chair Soffer, members of the committee, my name is Brett Arvidson. I live at 12340 Southwest Faircrest in Portland, 97225. I'm here to support House Bill 2674. I do want to express some concerns about remedies in this bill. I want to start off by saying I was one of those child support payers that was victimized. I had an employer that took out, paid $6,482 of my child support payments at least a month late. Oftentimes, he held them for 4 months. I was prosecuted by the district attorney's office. I had tax returns seized. There's a lot of things that happened to me. My credit rating was trashed, and I lost tax exemptions for my daughter. But the most worst thing that happened is my daughter didn't get the money. You know, it's, that's what the whole thing is about. And for waiting 4 months for child support payments is a long time for somebody, for a single mother. And so, you know, it has many effects, not only to the employer, but to everybody else. And I felt that this was something that, you know, I had many complaints with the DCS and Boley, and Boley told me they couldn't do anything about it. I think DCS could have done something about it, but didn't. But in the end, you know, I was held responsible for it, and that's what happened. I feel this House bill provides a very simple mechanism to file a complaint. I've actually pursued a legal complaint with this, against this employer under ORS 25-424, but you're going to court. This, it actually gives you a much simpler mechanism to deal with it. Plus, it gives you a chance to deal with it at an early stage where you can deal with the employer and say, yeah, hey, guy, if you don't take care of this, you're going to get a complaint and start dealing with it. This employer basically said, I didn't have your rights. Too bad, you know, it was between me and the and DC, it became in DCS, even though I was, you know, dealing with the DA at the time. I do want to express some concerns about the remedies proposed. Remedies for ORS 652.610 are actually contained in 652.615, and in that statute you have some ability for private remedies for Section 3. Those remedies would not be extended for this this proposal here. And I feel that private remedies are important in this situation. The Boley, I think, is going to do a nice job of helping to deal with this situation. But in my case, this employer cost me thousands of dollars. I think I need the ability to go back and get restitution for this. And I would not have that ability under this law. So I would like to suggest, and I've written that in my letter, is you make a minor change to 652, 615. All you have to do is delete a 3, and that would give the employee the ability to have a private remedy in this thing. Like I say, it costs me thousands of dollars just in tax exemptions alone, not to mention all the seizures and my credit rating being destroyed. But as that, I really appreciate the opportunity to speak to you, and I hope that you support this bill and carry it forward. Like I say, I think it's very important.
Thank you. I certainly hope you did get it squared away, and I hope this bill avoids that. Mr.
Minahan.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matt Minahan. I represent Dad's America. I'm also here today to address employer withholdings with regard to child support. Our members who elect to have their child support paid through withholdings are concerned about what happens when these payments aren't forwarded on. As pointed out before, they are still responsible for making these payments. And I need not remind you of the consequences of what happens when child support isn't being paid. We have members who are having driver's license suspended and revoked. In certain instances, jail time can be imposed. So again, we are concerned with that portion of it. And not to mention, as mentioned earlier as well, the children aren't receiving the funds necessary. So we do urge support for House Bill 2674, and again, we urge you to move it forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Cusho, when you're done, then we get up, and then we'll let Mr. Trejo go, and then we'll open for questions.
Thank you.
My pleasure. So don't you guys go anywhere.
Chair Schaffler, members of the committee, my name is Elizabeth Kushwa. I'm here on behalf of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, who support House Bill 2674. And I think that before Omar comes up, the one thing that hasn't been said is there's an agreement that begins this process. The employee agrees to a voluntary deduction. The employer agrees to facilitate that deduction. And so I think that there's a reasonable expectation on everybody's part that the money should get to where it's supposed to go in a timely fashion. We strongly support the Dash 1 amendments. And with that, I will bring Omar up.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Schaffler, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Omar Viña Trejo, and I represent the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, which has over 18,000 members in Oregon, and I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2674. The best way to illustrate why this bill is needed is to tell you what happened to me in January of last year. When members signed up for automatic deductions for the union dues, the employer is responsible for taking that out. My dues were taken out twice on the same month, and when the company finally discovered the problem, it took them 3 to 4 weeks to actually give us the money back. We didn't know whether they had actually sent them to the local and had to get reimbursed. But in the meantime, we were out of money, and to me that was important because it might just have been $34, but that pays a bill. And if that's basically the borderline between having a positive balance on my account or an overdraft charge, it is critical. I just would like to encourage you to support this bill and move forward.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Berger. Any other questions? I want to move this bill today. I think this is a good idea. And we're under the gun around here, and my schedule's totally full. I want to move this bill, and I'm intrigued with your changes, and we can talk to the commissioner and others about that. So don't give up hope. Mm-hmm. But we are under a schedule here, and I want to keep this going. But I'm full support of what we're doing here, and I want to find out more about what your potential changes. So I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2674 and open a work session on House Bill 2674. I will entertain a motion. Representative Rosenbaum?
Yeah, I'm just looking for the amendment, Mr. Chair. Is it the Dash 1?
Dash 1 amendment?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I'll move the Dash 1 amendment.
Representative Rosenbaum moves the Dash 1 amendment.
The House Bill 2674.
House Bill 2674. Is there a discussion? Any objection? So moved. Representative Rosenbaum.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2674 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Rosenbaum moves House Bill 2674 to the floor With a due pass recommendation, is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Berger.
I think I put on the record pretty clearly that I have a lot of heartburn over the very open language about the assessing of fees and the costs back to Boley. And I think Mr. Gardner heard me clearly that these rules need to be pretty clear because I don't want this to be some source of income for Boley. And I am persuaded that there is a problem with working people, and this is a true remedy for them with a 1 week for the, were I to rewrite this, Mr. Chair, it would be 2 weeks, but I will support the bill.
Thank you, Representative. I appreciate your comments. Any further discussion? All right. Kristen, please.
Representative
Edwards. Aye.
Representative
Berger.
Aye.
Excuse. Aye. Representative Witt, would you like to carry this bill on the floor?
Yes, I would. Thank you.
Very good. So be it then. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2674, and I'm going to jump down to Senate, open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 204.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 204 allows the Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries to accept a writ or a summons served on behalf of an unregistered farm worker camp operator. There is no fiscal or revenue impact on the bill, and it passed unanimously both out of the Senate Commerce Committee and the entire Senate.
Dan Gardner, come on down.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dan Gardner, Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. This bill would allow the Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries to accept process service on behalf of farm worker camp operators who are operating unregistered camps if the camp operator is not available to accept service in the state. It targets only those who are operating a camp illegally. A similar provision already exists in farm labor contracting law for a person who acts as an unlicensed farm labor contractor when the unlicensed farm labor contractor is unavailable for service of process in this state, and the summons and complaint must also be mailed to the last known address of the unlicensed contractor, if any, and any other address the plaintiff has reason to believe is likely to result in actual notice. This authority allows Boley and other persons to bring action for violations of the law against persons who are acting as unlicensed farm labor contractors and have violated the farm labor contracting law. On occasion, an unlicensed contractor will have also operated an unlicensed labor camp and commit violations of different provisions of ORS 658 pertaining to farm worker camps. Although Boley or any other person may pursue violations for farm labor contracting law by serving the labor commissioner if the camp and camp operator are no longer available for service, the farm worker camp violation may not currently be pursued if the camp operator cannot be served. This bill would allow us to accept that service. As the committee administrator said, this passed unanimously out of the Senate committee and unanimously out of the Senate. Matter of fact, it passed the Senate last session as well. There is no known opposition to the bill, and I'd urge your support for Senate Bill 2004.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Gardner. Any questions or comments? All righty then. Well, thank you very much. I don't see anyone else signed up here. Would anyone else like to testify to Senate Bill 204 today? Representative Berger.
I noted that representatives of the Farm Bureau is in the room. I just noted that he didn't come forward.
It's a public hearing. He's always welcome. He knows that. All right. If no one else is interested today in testifying on this, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 204 and open a work session on Senate Bill 204. Entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 204 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Holby moves Senate Bill 204 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Kristen, please.
Aye.
Aye.
Excuse?
Aye.
Excuse?
Aye.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, I move we put this on the consent calendar.
I couldn't agree more. Discussion, objection to consent calendar. Very good. And put it on the consent calendar. Representative Holy moves we put Senate Bill 204 on the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Seeing none, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 204 and get back in line here. And I'm going to reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2673. And I'm going to call Maria Keltner and Joe Schaefer and Alan Steger. Now, I'm calling folks up that may not agree with one another on this issue, but I'm confident we can all remain civil. Whenever you're ready.
Good afternoon. Maria Keltner representing the Association of Oregon Counties, and I'm sure we won't have a battle here at the table, even if we have different opinions. Association of Oregon Counties opposes House Bill 2673, and I have looked at the Dash 2 amendments, and they do address part of some of the concerns that we have. The first concern is that, as drafted, the bill would limit regular schedules to 5/8s or 4/10s unless overtime were paid. The amendment, the Dash 2 amendment, appears to take care of part of that problem. We're also concerned we have a lot of different kinds of flexible type schedules. For example, some folks work 4 9-hour days and then 1 4-hour day, which gives them 40 hours. And it's not real clear how the amendment would work in terms of if they exceeded the hours of days on a regular schedule. It looks like it's written to assume that every day the hours would be the same. So that's sort of a concern with the amendment, even though it does address 9-hour day schedules if you worked 9-hour days every day. The other area of concern is that this bill would limit flexible schedules that are desired by employees that have 21st century lifestyles. And for example, the employer and the employee would not be allowed to agree to a flexible schedule where the employee took a couple hours off on Tuesday and then worked an extra hour on Wednesday and Thursday so that they didn't have to use leave time. If they didn't use leave time and they were allowed to work those 2 extra hours, then they would have worked a 40-hour week and would have gotten 2 hours of overtime under the bill as written. In 95, before 1995, when the Oregon law was changed, the 8-hour overtime requirement only applied to local governments. It didn't apply to the public sector or the state employees. And one of the reasons that local governments sought to change that law was, the primary reason was to allow flexible scheduling. This would be a regression back to the same problems that were addressed when the law was changed back in 95. So from our perspective, it looks like the policy choice is between flexible choices for modern lifestyles or a concept from the past that looked at lifestyles and work styles and work arrangements from the past. And we would request that you not pass House Bill 2673, at least not in its current form.
Thank you.
Or even with the amendment the way it's drafted. Excuse me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Go ahead, sir. Go ahead, Joe, if you want to go first.
So my name is Joe Schaefer. I'm a resident here in Salem, and I work for the Service Employees International Union. And we're here today to speak in support of this bill. We think that this is kind of where the rubber meets the road when you talk about family values. We've got members who are fairly regularly assigned extra shifts at the end of their workday. And to say that it's not a hardship on their families is you know, really not true. I know that I've got small kids, and if I can't make it home when I say I'm going to, everybody in my family suffers for that. And we think that this, you know, reverting back to an 8-hour workday, which is, you know, really kind of the norm for civilized society that we'd like to see instituted, is the right way to go, and that we support this type of legislation. Thank you.
Sir, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Alan Steiger, and I'm Vice President of Legal Affairs for ADEC. ADEC is opposed to House Bill 2673. ADEC is a family-owned, privately held dental equipment manufacturer in Newburgh, and we are the largest employer in Yamhill County. Our founders, early on in the creation of ADEC, came up with the concept of the ADEC way to express their values and enable us to develop a culture that would carry on after them. The first principle, not unsurprisingly, is concern for people. What that means for me as a 25-year employee of ADEC is a number of things. Our owners and founders, Ken and Joanne Austin, are very caring, compassionate people. They comment and treat the employees as family. That's not to mean we don't have guidance from time to time. It also, what they have stated is they want ADEC to be a place where they would want to come to work. And they demonstrate that through the decisions they make regarding our facility and a number of other areas. In a recent poll of business leaders, ADEC was named the fourth most admired company in manufacturing and the top 10 of all companies in Oregon. One way that ADEC expresses its concern for people is to listen to them. Many years ago, a number of employees came to ADEC and asked us to consider summer hours. Summer hours consist of 4 9-hour days followed by a 4-hour day on Friday. We did that for a number of years, noticed the increased morale as well as no loss in productivity, and we've extended that to year-round now for the administrative staff. ADEC also has a make-up work program. If an employee has to take an hour off, a couple of hours off, to go to see the doctor, take a sick child to the doctor, we allow that employee to make up that time in the same work week as long as there's no effect on employee safety. I'm fearful that we would lose that capability and that benefit to the employees if House Bill 2673 were passed. Not knowing how House Bill 2673 would be interpreted or implemented, we have some other concerns as well. ADEC has had consistent growth over its 43 years existence. As a manufacturing company, one option is to add facilities and equipment. That is not always a cost-effective manner of growth. As you have read and we have read, we are losing manufacturing jobs in the state of Oregon and the United States because we are not a cost-effective country. What we have done to provide employees some options, because we're seeing more two-wage earner families, is to go to a second shift, which is a four-day, 10-hour shift, Monday through Thursday. We also have a third shift that is a 12-hour shift for 3 days, Friday through Sunday. Employees receive a shift differential, and the third shift receives overtime for hours over 10 hours a day. To the extent that House Bill 2673 restricts our flexibility, that would force ADEC to look for other options for growth. That would not be good for Oregon or Oregon employees. There's a number of principles in the ADEC way that are useful for making decisions. I would just point out a few of them to you. Principle number 11 is dedication to improvement. Make change for needed improvement, not for change itself. Principle number 12, keep things simple and basic. Satisfy the need without complication. Principle 13 is building on a basis of need. Proceed only if there is a compelling or anticipated need for the contemplated action.
Mr. Steiger, with all due respect, I'm sure ADEC is a fine company and treats its employees well. My wife has your products in her dental practice, but we're running out of time here, and I would gladly sit and talk to you any day, all day long, about the great company ADEC. I really need to get to the meat of this bill, so if you could move on and sum up your opposition to the language in the bill. Please, thank you. With all due respect, sir.
Thank you.
We have to respect all these other people's time, too.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would hate to be the person to stand up in front of 1,000 employees and tell them we can no longer offer them what we consider and what they consider to be a benefit and a way of expressing our care for people.
And I agree with you, by the way. That is one of the main reservations I have here, is employers like you have a relationship with your employees already. And that is a main reservation I have for this language. And any questions of this panel right here?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Steiger, have you seen the amendment that has been proposed to this bill?
Just briefly.
Does that satisfy some of your concerns?
Answers the concerns that ADEC has.
Okay. Any further questions of this panel? Thank you very much. Very much. Thank you for coming. Brent DeHart, Dan Gardner, John Miller, and Commissioner Gardner, come on up. Pardon me?
Representative
Rosenbaum
is also going.
Yes. Representative, were you going to testify too? Excuse me. Mr. Miller, would you just wait patiently? And Commissioner, I didn't see you buried in. We have two lists, and you're buried in one of them. I knew you wanted to speak to this bill, though.
Mr. Chair, I'm sure you knew I was somewhere at the heart of this bill. for the record, my name is Dan Gardner, Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries, and happy to be here today testifying in favor of House Bill 2673 for overtime after 8 hours.
Thank you.
You know, this bill, you know, especially with the Dash 2 amendments, I think addresses a very much needed situation in Oregon Day. The Bureau of Labor and Industries, we get calls quite frequently from employees who ask us if that their employer just told them they were scheduled for 8 hours and their employer just told them they have to work 12, 14, and in some cases 16 hours in a day. Where another employee hasn't shown up, they're told they have to work those hours. And it really, to me, it is unfair to those employees. I have to tell them that basically that is perfectly legal as long as you don't exceed 40 hours in the week. And as we're an at-will state, one can be let go for refusing to work those kind of hours. To me, we talk a lot in this building about family values. And to me, the largest family value we have out there is spending time with your family. And if you come in on a Tuesday, you're scheduled for 8 hours, you're suddenly told you got to work 12, but you can also take off 4 hours on Friday so that you're not over that 40 hours a week, it doesn't do you one iota of good if your son or daughter's baseball game is Tuesday evening. You know, if you can't plan on the activities in an evening you can do with your family, what we're saying with this bill really is, if the employer really needs you that badly, then pay the premium of time and a half. I'd point out that there are three other states, California, Colorado, and Alaska, that have this law. Even the U.S. territories of Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands do. Matter of fact, California has double time after 12 hours in a day. And if three states and two U.S. territories can, Endeavor businesses can figure out a way to make that work. I think that's the right thing to do for your employees. This bill, with the amendments, would allow for any schedule that's regularly scheduled, from 4-10s to 3-12s to 4-9s and a 5. It would allow for us to set up 4 rules for those. Those were asked for by proponents of the bill. I have been very willing to work with opponents of the bill, rather, on any of their concerns. I've talked to many companies out there, and really a lot of companies out there are very, very good employers, as ADEC I'm sure is, and works with their employees. It is those that, you know, would force an employee to work overtime and take them away from their family that we're addressing with this bill.
Thank you. Representative. We'll open it to questions in just a minute.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Diane Rosenbaum, State Rep for House District 42, and appearing in support of House Bill 2673. You know, I think that most people believe that we do have an 8-hour day in this country and in this state, and really either shocked to find out that you can be forced to work more than that, and there's really no penalty that accrues to that. And Now, since the eight-hour day was created, and that was in the Franklin Roosevelt administration, I believe back in 1938, this has been a time-honored principle. I think Representative Witt spoke well when he talked about that concept. People, when they're asked, would they rather have more money or more time to spend with their families? Most people say they'd rather have the time, even though they would love to have a raise too. And I think that is because of the pressures of, you know, the stressful lives everybody leads now. People need to be able to have that time. And so when an employer decides that it's in their interest to force somebody to work overtime, then there should be some advantage to the employee that attaches to that. I think this bill has a reasonable proposal in it. The amendment, I think, makes it even more so by allowing there to be a set schedule that exceeds the 8 hours, whether it's 4 tens or something else. And once that limit's reached, then there has to be a time and a half payment. There has to be some limit to how the number of hours in a day that somebody can be asked to work. I think that most people would think that that's reasonable. That's all the bill is doing with the amendment. I think it is quite easy to implement, and I would urge your support.
Thank you. Mr. Miller, you have a different opinion here. Excuse me, Mr. Dahl.
Thank you.
I'll get my people straight here soon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Appreciate the opportunity to speak. I prepared comments prior to, and I have yet seen the amendments proposed. So with your indulgence, you know, you can consider my testimony as relating and how they relate to how you might handle the amendments also. My name is Brent D. Hart. I'm a local small business person. I serve in the local Salem Area Chamber of Commerce Board, but I'm speaking for myself. I'm here to oppose the bill on behalf of both employers and, I believe, those that they employ. I appreciated the history lesson from Representative Witt because my comments are that are specific related to how I do not believe that this is a public policy for our age. We live in an age with two working parents, and I know a couple who each work 3 long days in the same profession in order that one parent is home 6 days a week and everybody is home on the 7th day. Now, this is their choice, and it works for them, and I wouldn't have you take it away if you may. Parents need the flexibility to schedule one early worker and one late worker. Some of them do. They to minimize the high cost both to the pocketbook and to the child of daycare and latchkey. One parent is home to get the children off to school. One's there when they get them after school, before school, after school. And I don't think you want to take that away. We live in an age of shared custody, unfortunately, with half of all marriages ending in divorce. I know a single mom who works her 3 12-hour shifts on the days that her ex-husband has her children. Now, so that way she can be available to all the other days of the week for her young boys and still make enough money to be able to support the household on her own. Now, these hours are her choice. They're her desire in her life. It's her necessity. I would ask that you not take that away. We live in an age that demands more and more education to earn a livable wage. Students are lucky to find jobs that both accommodate the schedule and as they change and provide enough income, which often means working long work hours on days they do not have class. This would hurt their ability to better themselves and attain their own educational and income goals. I myself have an employee who's 21 years old, recently married, a baby on the way, wants to be a history teacher. And to do so, the only way he can support his wife and go to Chemeketa and beyond to get his credential is to work long weekend hours, often asking other employees if he can pick up their hours in an effort to gain more money for him to continue working his way through school to accomplish his career goals. We also live in an age of increasing urban densities and traffic congestion. Flex time, as it relates both to hours of the day and days of the week, benefits both society and the employees. I have a friend who works longer than average days, and we've discussed this today, and gets a 3-day weekend with his family other weekend. It allows him to be involved with scouts. It allows him to do a lot of camping with his family, and that works. Each time an employer and employee agree to create a scheduling that results in a 3 or 4 day work week. It takes cars off the road It lessens congestion. It lessens pollution. It lessens our contributions to global warming. It also increases the amount of time the employee has for living their lives instead of being in traffic. Now, we're sitting here with completely opposite opinions on the bill, but with the same goal in mind. And I would ask the committee and the chair in the House to let the employee decide and not decide the public policy in this body. Critical to all my points is this. We live in an age where both local and international market competition demands efficiencies. Employers are not going to choose to pay overtime. They'll take away options. It's going to force families, even those with preschool-age children, to work 5 days a week instead of three or four. As an employer, I've accommodated high school and college classes. I've accommodated daycare needs, divorce custody restrictions, bus schedules. You pretty much name it in my 16 years as an employer. I give my managers the freedom to schedule anybody however they like with one caveat, no overtime. So who is the bill going to hurt and help? And I'm arguing that perhaps it's not going to help anybody at all, but it is going to help the hurt the workers and the families by taking away their flexibility. When someone says, and I'm a little league coach, of course, and says, can I kick off early on Wednesday and make it up on Thursday and Friday because my kid's got a game in Corvallis, you want to be able to say yes and not no because the state tells me it's going to cost me more money if I allow that flexibility. I do not want the bill to hurt volunteerism in our communities from leading the church choir to coaching Little League because we don't allow the flexibility. Our age demands creativity and flexibility, and this economic hammer will restrict both of those things. And prescribing an individual's or a few people's idea of how others should live their lives through the tool of wage law, it will be counterproductive, and I urge you to not support in this form House Bill 2673. Thank you.
Yeah, I've shared my reservations with you good people, and I do. I just want to know if you want to respond to any of the concerns that have been shared here today. I really do think we have to have that conversation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just thinking about coworkers of mine in previous jobs that I've held and how often, I mean, it would be great if everybody was just working whatever number of hours they wanted to. That's not the reality of the workplace, and I'm not sure what world people are living in, but it's not the one that I have experienced. You know, I have experienced people in difficult jobs, demanding jobs, who come in day after day where an employer has made a choice rather than hiring more people to simply force the workers they have to work longer days. People are not doing that by choice in many cases, and the testimony that you're hearing would make it appear that all the people that are working 12-hour days just want to do that at their own convenience. Well, what about all the people who don't want to do that, who don't have a choice, and who at the same time are working those long days at straight time? I don't think that's fair. I mean, I would be curious to hear what employers who are testifying about the bill would say about the involuntary overtime that people often work and whether that also should be just worked at the same wage rate. Because to me, that's people aren't wanting to do that, and I don't think it's fair that they should have to. Maybe everybody should be able to just leave work when they feel like it and stay as long as they want, and then they could get paid whatever, you know, the hourly rate is. Well, that isn't what I think is going on out there.
I know this much. If the truck's scheduled at 7 and it shows up at 11, you're there till that concrete's finished. And there's things that can be unpredictable. And that's why that's what I'm worried about. And the idea of family values, those words are used and abused on all sides of all issues. And if I hear them again, and I know I'm going to, they don't mean anything anymore, unfortunately. Dan, would you like to?
Well, Mr. Chair, whether family values mean anything or not, spending time with your family means a lot, and I think it does to anyone with a family. And as the gentleman to my right here, you know, as I was listening to his testimony, the one interesting thing that he did say to me was that he felt it should be the employee's choice. Well, let's take a look at current law. It is not the employee's choice. It is the employer's choice. And that's the bottom line, is that in current law today, it is the employer's choice. There are people who are being forced to work overtime, being forced to miss their child's Little League game, being forced to miss the school play and other things. And we need to make sure that they have an opportunity to spend that time with their families.
And one thing I didn't point out in my testimony is that there is a long list of exemptions that is currently in law that actually stays in place in this law, from domestic employees to agriculture workers and a number of others. We don't make any change in this particular bill to those.
Just to clarify this, though, they're still going to miss their game. They're just, they, if this were to pass, they'd just get paid time and a half or some kind of overtime. They'd still miss the family event.
Mr. Chair, that is true. They could miss the event, but I think they would miss it less likely because, just as the gentleman to my right said, that he allows his people to schedule employees with one caveat: any flex schedule you want, as long as it doesn't get into overtime. I think most employers are that way. So more than likely, you know, 95 to 99% of those we're talking about who would be forced to miss that game wouldn't be, because the employer would be unwilling to pay the time and a half, which to me really shows that the employer didn't need them to work those hours, that forced overtime, as much as they thought they did. If they did, they'd be willing to pay the time and a half.
Any questions of this fine panel here? Representative Burr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gardner, I did hear you indicate that farm workers are exempt from this provision in this bill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, under Oregon administrative rules and under some of the exemptions that are currently in law, the Oregon Administrative Rule 839-020-0125 lists out all those that are exempt, including employees of a motion picture theater, employees of a private recreation and amusement establishment, and a number of others, which, please don't ask me why they are. I have absolutely no idea in the world.
Representative Berger.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you for your point. The one that I was going to make is there is nothing in this provision that solves the problem of the Little League game and the you got to stay an extra hour piece, because you still would miss the Little League game if you stay. You just would get time and a half for missing the Little League game. There's nothing in this bill that says the employer has to let you go. It simply says you have to pay overtime.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, there is nothing in the bill that says that you wouldn't have to miss the game. The employer would be incredibly less likely to have you miss the game, but you certainly could afford a few more bats and a couple of balls for the kid, too.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair,
yes.
If I could make the point, I have been an employer, and I have worked in a manufacturing establishment, and it has been my experience that it is in the best interest of employers to make these kinds of things work for their employees. And what they are trying to do with a flexible 40-hour work week is to employ as many people as they can in a way that is efficient, that gets the job done, so they can make money, so they can grow their business, so they can hire more employees, so they can make money, so they can grow their business, so they can hire more employees. I think this is a step in the wrong direction in our global sort of sense of how we schedule things. I have no objection to overtime. I really don't. But there's so many ways to compute a work week, and Mr. DeHart, who has to struggle with this on a daily basis, he and all the employers that I know are not trying to take advantage of employees. They're trying to work with them in a creative and flexible way. And I just think this is a very much of a step in the sort of anti-family values direction, because it works the opposite.
Well, Mr.
And we could argue this all day.
Mr. You're going to have to move along, so go ahead, Dan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, you know, a lot of employers out there, most of them, the overwhelming vast majority, are working with their employees, and that's very, very true. And I applaud them, those that are. There are a few out there that don't, and I would say that those are the ones that I get the calls from employees going, oh, my God, can they really do this to me?
And, Mr. Chair,
I'm going to really have to move along, Representative. Go ahead.
Chair,
one more, and then we're
moving on. This hurts the good ones. in your attempt to hurt the bad ones.
And I'm going to make one more comment to this panel, then I am moving along. It don't matter if you're for or against this. Someone out there thinks we're against family values. All right, thank you very much. Don Miller, Lisa Trussell, Ed Durkee. Go right ahead, sir. Thank you for your patience.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for allowing me to testify. I'll be very brief and tell you a little bit about my reality. I run a small company here in Salem.
Oh, sir, you have to introduce yourself for the record.
My name is John Miller.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And I run a small company here in Salem. We have about 300 employees. We do not allow overtime. We simply can't afford it. So our people, work within the 40-hour work week. And I had a situation just this week where one of our employees, their first child arrived a little early. And so he was gone for a couple of days. And he's just the kind of person that he needs that income. So I know that he's making it up these last few days of the week. And if this bill were in place, he wouldn't be able to do that. He would just have to forego the income. And frankly, we have a lot of employees that they don't have the 8 hours of work, 8 hours of recreation, 8 hours of sleep motto. They have more of a 4 days of work, 3 days of skiing motto. And they would like the flexibility to be able to do that when they would like. And I agree with Representative Berger's comment that the commissioner may be trying to help a few employees and hurt a few bad employers, but I feel like we have a great relationship with our employees. And I also find it hard to believe that the term was used that the employees are forced to work overtime. That may work for a day or two, but in this competitive labor market, we don't force employees to do anything. We work as hard as we can to keep the good employees, and we do that by treating them well.
If I was working for a jerk, I'd just up and quit. Go ahead.
That's what I do.
My name is Ed Durkee. I'm the Director of Employment and Training for Goodwill Industries of Lane and South Coast Counties. I'm also speaking on behalf of the two other Goodwill organizations in Oregon, the Goodwill Industries of the Columbia Willamette and the Goodwill Industries of Southern Oregon. Our comments, which are submitted, are similar to those of the other employers here, so I'll be very brief. As a retailer, in our retail thrift stores, we have peak seasons that really demand, flexible schedules. And we also, like the other employers have mentioned, we really go out of our way to accommodate the personal needs of the workers that we have. All of the examples I personally have, our company has 325 employees, and every example of a need for flexibility because of personal life situations that the other employers have mentioned, I've also had, every single one of them. And we eagerly accommodate those. And the current overtime structure of 40 hours in a week allows us the flexibility to do that.
Thank you. Lisa?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Lisa Trussell with Associated Oregon Industries, and I handed out to you a piece that one of my members asked to distribute to Oregon Freeze Dry and what the bill would mean to them. We're here to oppose the bill. Most of the concerns have been raised by others before me. But one of the key things is that, particularly from the manufacturer side, is that they are competing in a global economy. And if Oregon's doing something that only three other states to do, they feel that puts them at a significant economic disadvantage. So thank you.
And Puerto Rico.
Yeah, two states in Puerto Rico. Thank you.
Any questions of these nice people? Representative Edwards.
Thank you. I've been quiet thus far, and it's been interesting to me to see.
Representative, the listener learns the most. You're commended. Be commended.
I don't know if I've learned anything, but it's been interesting to me to see how passionate people are on both sides of this issue. I actually, coming into this hearing, I had no idea how passionate people were going to be on both sides. I have serious reservations with this bill, and I wanted everybody in here to know that. I come from a small business background. We treated our employees like family,
And I'll never forget when we decided to sell the business at one of the exit interviews. I was the lady that she was leaving the company, and she said, you know what, I really, really appreciated the opportunity to work here because it restored hope for me that there are still decent people that treat their fellow humanity like they should be treated. And that was our competitive advantage. We couldn't pay the wages that Weyerhaeuser had, that Weyerhaeuser paid. We couldn't pay the wages that Rosebrook Forest Products paid. But we treated our employees like family, and it was a competitive advantage to us. And one of the ways that we did that was we accommodated all sorts of flexible scheduling. And I understand that we have to have standards. We have to have standards. It's just a matter, I think what we're arguing about is where we draw the line. And I know that there are people that feel just as passionately on the other side of this issue, but I did want to get on the record that that I think I feel comfortable with the 40-hour work week. So,
thank you, Representative Holy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been pretty silent over here too for a little bit, but and I just want to chime in. I found it interesting too, just as Representative Edwards has, but. Found it interesting, but I also, you know, have experienced it myself, and with the 40-hour work week, from time to time, you know, you go to work and you don't know what time you're going to get done, and you have commitments after work, and you go to work and you think you're going to work 8 hours, you end up working 14, and then the next day you work only 4 or 5, and it makes it really hard to plan a life, and so. You know, I think Representative Edwards hit it on the head. Is, you know, at some point we do need to have some sort of standard work day, I believe. You know, because otherwise I could be forced to work two 20-hour days in a row, and you know that wouldn't really make for a good lifestyle for me. And as long as I've been around, the employees don't set the work schedule. The employer does, and. You know, I think that they should be able to plan their business well enough to know how many hours they need to have worked and set a schedule accordingly and stick to that schedule. And if at times pop up that they need people to work more on a particular thing to meet whatever demands there are in the market, you know, they need to weigh those options and pay the overtime if it's worth it to them. And so I think there does need to be a line drawn and determine what line that is, whether it's 8 hours. We've heard testimony that some people have 9-hour schedules, you know, or 10-hour schedules. I think we just need to establish that because I think there needs to be consistency for the employee as well.
Thank you, Representative. Any further comments to these nice people?
Mr. Chair, just a comment. I'm just curious how anybody functioned in this state between 1967 and when this was repealed, which was not until 1985. So, obviously, we were managing for quite a long time.
Well...
With a stricter bill than what's proposed here, with a stricter law.
Alrighty then. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I'd like to call Elizabeth Kushwa and Duke Shepherd, please. Go ahead.
Members of the committee, I am Elizabeth Kushwa, representing the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. I'll make my comments quick because my latchkey kid's home alone. UFCW recognizes the change in what's a standard work week, and we seek to protect the rights of those workers in a set work week schedule regardless of the permutation of those hours. This bill provides the worker with a secure knowledge of what his or her day will entail and just compensate them adequately for any day that is out of the ordinary for whatever reason. So UFCW does support the bill.
Thank you.
Duke Shepherd, Oregon AFL-CIO, with the entirely stunning testimony that we support the bill. I would just say we believe you can provide employer flexibility and employee certainty or reward financially the time lost when that certainty isn't there for the employee. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of these nice folks? Thank you very much. I'm going to call Steve Bryant and J.L. Wilson. There's the last two. Go ahead, Mr. Bryant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Steve Bryant, representing the League of Oregon Cities today.
Wait a minute. And I'm going to call Jeno Ingram, too. Forgive me. Go ahead, Mr. Bryant.
Thank you. May surprise the committee. I began my public service career as a member of AFSCME, working as an assistant planner. My work was often punctuated by long evening meetings, neighborhood meetings, lengthy planning commission meetings, city council meetings, but I always accepted the fact that our meager public budget couldn't support overtime costs, so I adjusted my work schedule accordingly for many of the reasons that we've heard about today. We had a rule in a small planning department that we just wanted to make sure the public was served, and we worked as a team with flexible work schedules to make sure that the public service counter was always open, that somebody was there to answer questions, but that we worked when the public needed us after hours, and we would attend their meetings, and it was a very unusual work schedule, but it worked well for us, and I would say that it continues to work that way in the public sector for many of our employees who have to serve the public. And for that reason, there would be a fiscal impact to this bill on local government if it were passed in its current or amended form that we would hope you would take a look at. As someone who then later supervised a workforce of over 300 employees under the old rules, pre-1995, I believe, when the standard was last in effect, I can assure you that we were loath to pay overtime, as you've heard, from private sector employers in order to accommodate those flexible work schedules. Instead, what that environment created was a very rigid environment where people basically were encouraged to punch a time clock, whether they were on an 8-hour day or a 10-hour day. And that just isn't conducive to today's workforce that demands flexibility. The folks who do want to work the 10 or 12 hour day so they can attend the Little League game. I was a Little League coach and often was recruiting other people to coach, and it was those people who had the flexible work schedules that could do it. The others simply weren't able to because they worked a rigid work week. And I recognize there's a difference in employers and how they treat their employees. But today's workforce prefers that flexible schedule. And I certainly agree with the comment that has been made that when given the choice between time and money, most today's workers choose time. And the way they do that is with the flexible work week that progressive employers provide. I would also add that most of us in the public sector, of course, our employees are represented, and we go through the collective bargaining process wherein, as this bill makes it clear, different standards can be bargained for and often are. And many of our units do bargain for very specific overtime provisions that are quite variable. And that environment can continue without this legislation. So happy to answer any questions. Thank you for the opportunity.
Genoa, go ahead, please. Mm-hmm. And I didn't mean to leave you off. I'm just
that's fine,
jumping around on this.
Genoa Ingram, Oregon State Chamber of Commerce. The nice thing about going next to last is that everything I was going to say has already been said anyway. So I've just asterisked three tiny little points that I just wanted to emphasize. I would be remiss if I didn't mention a conversation I had with an employer in the Albany area who allows their, have worked out a compromise with their employees to work a 3 12-hour day, and then the following week they would work 3 12-hours and then a 10, so that the whole thing comes out to 80, but you have a week there where you're working an additional of 40 hours. So we just wanted to echo, you know, it's nice to talk about the 1800s and such, but there weren't the high gas prices that we have today. And one of the things that, you know, I appreciate when my employer says, you know, it's a slow time if you want to work a 4-day week, you know, 4-10s, or if you want to telecommute from home, I consider that a raise, because I don't have to drive the 40 minutes into Salem in the morning and in the evening, and I really do appreciate that. You have my written testimony before you. There was one other example of I spoke with a young man who now is staff to one of our chambers, and he indicated to me that when he was in school, he appreciated the fact that he had an employer who would allow him to work extra hours when he had no, actually had no class, when his class schedule was light and he could work a full, you know, additional hours, and then the next day if it were, you know, when he had a heavy class load, he could not work at all or work a lighter day. So I think the key word here is flexibility, and we appreciate the ability for employers and employees to work that out and, you know, continue the flexibility that we have today. Thank you.
Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Chair Schaffler, members of the committee. For the record, J.L. Wilson representing NFIB, also speaking today on behalf of the Metals Council, the Food Processors, Oregon Restaurant Association, and the Oregon Lodging Association, opposing House Bill 2673. All the salient points have been made. I'll just make one point, which is the reality of the small business workplace today. Just keep in mind that 80% of your employers employ 9 or fewer employees. And what happens, this bill has generated more attention than any other by far that have been proposed this session. And what happens, the small employers who say, you know, I'll grant an employee time off, even if it's just for an hour or two, for a worker to watch a school play or run an errand or something along those lines. Usually the first line of defense and the first person who makes up that extra time is in fact the owner themselves, who obviously does not make an hourly rate, in fact just probably pays themselves what's left over at the end of payroll. But the point being, the only person who really loses financially under this deal is the worker, who is then not allowed to work more than 8 hours to make up that time lost. I've also attached a summary of a Stanford University study on the California law, and also an NCSL comparison of 50 state wage and hour laws as it pertains to overtime that you might find helpful.
Thank you. Any questions of this panel? Well, I just want to say that I have reservations about this concept. I'm not going to beat around the bush. I've worked in agriculture, manufacturing, services, and the building trades, and I always liked to have a job. I always had one. And when I went to work, I went to work on the assumption that I may not get out at 3:30. And that's just the way it is, and I didn't like it. And if somebody was jerking me around, I'd go down the road and find me a better employment. And I'm confident that's what everyone can do. This idea that they're locked into that job, I don't buy it. I don't buy it one bit. That being said, there are options. That's one. I think every employee should have a contract with their employer, and we would avoid all this conversation. And this bill will not allow for the men and women out there working to attend the events that we're talking about them missing. I agree, we have to have standards. But happy workers make happy products. And if workers are unhappy, your business is going to suffer for it. Now, that doesn't mean, you all know, everybody in this building knows how I am about what I feel about labor and how much I care about workers. This bill, in my opinion, reaches too far into that relationship, and I believe would damage many good existing relationships just trying to get at a few bad apples, which I would go to great lengths to punish the bad apples. But I don't see any reason in penalizing good employers just because of the actions of a few bad ones. But that being said, the proponents of this bill have my greatest respect. They work their backsides off in support of labor, and I enjoy and am proud to say I put my shoulder to that wheel. I also understand there's going to be a ballot measure that was announced today. That's for that reason. I don't see any reason why this bill should go any further. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2673, and I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 202.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 202 requires farm labor contractors to provide workers' compensation insurance for workers. There's no fiscal revenue, and the bill passed unanimously out of the Senate Commerce Committee and from the full Senate. You can also remind that we're a subcommittee here. So.
And I'm going to open a subcommittee, the House Committee on Business. And I'm going to call Commissioner Gardner, who's been eternally patient with his time and this chair today.
Well, like patience is a two-way street, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for recognizing that.
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dan Gardner, Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. Happy to be here on Senate Bill 202. To put this simply, This bill, if passed, would make state law consistent in its treatment of farm labor contractors and farm forest contractors. It would extend the requirement that farm labor contractors provide proof of workers' compensation insurance as a condition of being issued a farm labor contractor license by the Bureau of Labor and Industries. Under this legislation, all farm labor contractors, both farm and farm forest, would have to have provide proof of workers' compensation insurance coverage as a condition of being issued a farm labor contractor's license. This would make the law consistent. This bill actually received the unanimous support of MLAC, the Management Labor Advisory Committee, in February. There is no known opposition to the bill. The bill passed the Senate this session 27-0. It passed last session, the Senate, 26-3. So we're doing better. And I'd urge your support.
We don't have this amendment for them.
Okay. And Dan, is an amendment coming to this?
I believe, Mr. Chair, that is a conflict amendment with Legislative Council over perhaps differences in the same statutes between Senate Bill 202 and 203.
Okay.
It's not my amendments. Those would be LC conflict amendments.
That's why we're not moving it today. Very good. Any questions of Commissioner Gardner? Would anyone else like to testify to House Bill, Senate Bill 2003? Mark? Okay. Very good. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 2002. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 202. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 203. Mr. Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, again, my name is Dan Gardner, Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. Senate Bill 2003, by way of background, any person who bids or submits a price on...
For the record, Mr. Gardner, it's Senate Bill 203. You've listened to me too much today.
And I 203, Senate Bill 203, submits prices on contracts, and any other person who's compensated, recruits, or supplies workers for production of farm crops or restoration of lands must apply for a farm and farm forest license. The license is good for 1 year from the date of issue. The license program protects both farmers and farm workers. This bill would seek to deter contractors from operating without a license or operating in an unlawful manner. It would increase the minimum amount of damages recovered from a person acting as a farm labor contractor from $500 to $2,000, which the contractor violates one or more of the following provisions: acting as an unlicensed contractor, failing to provide certified payrolls as required, failing to provide workers' compensation insurance to workers, or assisting in as an unlicensed person in the act of violation of farm or farm forest labor contracting law. The amount currently recoverable by a person who has damaged by a farm labor contractor who violates one or more of these provisions is actual damages, or $500, whichever is greater. In essence, this amount has not been raised since 1981. This proposal increases it from $500 to $2,000. And again, this bill passed the Senate 27-1, unanimously out of the committee. There's no known opposition to the bill. I'd urge your support of Senate Bill 203.
And there's something keeping this holding this up.
Yes,
as well.
Mr. Chair, conflict amendments for
it's the two bills.
Okay. The two bills that conflict, yes.
Right, I understand. Any further questions of Commissioner Gardner? And no one else wants to testify. I'm going to close the public hearing on
203.
Well, Mr. Chair, I keep doing it. Senate Bill 203. And just for the record, let me get my thoughts in order here. I just want you to know that I hope we pass law this year in this session, out of this House and out of the Senate, and the governor signs it, that would make sure that no employer would be able to force their employees to sit and listen about why they should vote against any future ballot measures that may be on the ballot in the future. I wanted to share that with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Right.
Thank you very much. With that, and with nothing else, we are adjourned.